The second column, so the first entry I filled in for you, because the Gemara does not actually use any words to explain the Mishnah, it treats the Mishnah as being self-evident. The Mishnah says that the Tcheles is not Ma'akiv the Lavan, and that the Lavan is not Ma'akiv the Tcheles. The Mishnah, the Gemara treats these words as being self-evident. There's no need to explain them.
I'll make a first announcement.
Mm-hmm.
I just had a conversation with the wife of Joel. He's in the hospital now. At the Booth Memorial, has pneumonia and he has a.
You alright?
Yes. The urinary tract infection too, and pneumonia. He's in a regular room, but may wait a day too before
he
goes.
Did you get his name?
I think, but he's. He's not doing too well.
Did you get his Hebrew name so we can learn it?
I can go back later.
Pull back now. Pull back now and get his Hebrew name.
Well, God will, I think everyone here knows him. God will recognize him by his English name also.
Yeah.
That's Okay. So we had this Mishnah, which the Gemara treats as being self-evident, but to the Rishonim, it was not so self-evident. So we had two interpretations of the Mishnah, the interpretation of Rashi. Can someone summarize for me what was Rashi's interpretation of the Mishnah? Or give me Tosva's interpretation of the Mishnah, whichever one you choose.
Rashi said four white is okay.
That four white strings are okay. If you're missing the Tcheles and put in two lavan, two white strings, either as a replacement or because it can't hurt, so Rashi says four white strings, which is what we do. If you're missing one color, put in four of the other. Right? And what difficulty did the Gemara find with this explanation?
Only
according to the Chachamim, only according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. It's not going according to Rabbi. Rabbi is the author of the Mishnah. The Balamar claims that Rabbi is halacha l'maisa, but at the very least, Rabbi is the author of the Mishnah. The Mishnah should be consistent with Rabbi's opinion. Let me ask you, do we paskin like Rashi? And how do we paskin? Kosher or apostle? Ideal or not ideal? If you're missing the blue strings, do you put in four white?
Yes.
So that is kosher and ideal. Excellent. So that's Rashi. What about Tosfos? What does Tosfos say is the interpretation of the Mishnah? That if Tcheles is not makiv the lavan, the absence of Tcheles doesn't prevent lavan from its Tosfos. Interpret that.
Two whites or two blues.
Either two whites or two blues. If you're missing one color, four of the other, put in two of the other. What was the Gemara's objection, right? Or what difficulty did the Gemara find with this explanation? The structure of the chart should give it away. What difficulty is with this explanation?
Well, you need four.
No, that's not the question.
Oh, it has.
The structure of the chart should give it away. Same problem that we have for Rashi, we have for Tosfos. That's why they're all one backs. This only reflects the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Does not reflect the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. So again, and do we paskin like Tosfos?
No.
We do not paskin like Tosfos, right? Because Tosfos says we should only be putting two white strings in, but Tosfos himself acknowledged that the Minhag HaOlam is against him and that we follow Rashi, Halacha L'maisa. So we don't paskin like Tosfos. Is there any way to fulfill both Rashi's and Tosfos explanations, right, of the Mishnah? Is there any way to be Yotze both of them? The answer is either yes or no. It's not a trick question.
What's the question?
Is there any way to be Yotze both Rashi and Tosfos explanation of the Mishnah? Rashi says if you don't have blue, you put in four white strings. Tosu says if you don't have blue, you put in two white strings. It's not a trick question. Is there any way to be Yotze both of them?
That's two and two. Put two and two together.
That's Tosfos. For Rashi, that might have been Baltosif, right? We saw the Rashba thought that there's a potential issue of Baltosif. So for Tosfos, there's a potential issue of Baltosif if you read Rashi very narrowly. And for Rashi, if you follow Rashi, there's a potential isser of Baltigra, of diminishing, of taking away parts of a mitzvah, according to Tosfos. So the two of them seem to be rather mutually exclusive if you read Rashi somewhat narrowly. Okay, numbers 3 and 4. What word, one word, did the Gemara use to explain a second explanation, a second interpretation of the Mishnah. Keep in mind that the Gemara uses the following key words, lo nitzricha ella. Whenever the Gemara is going to revise and give a new interpretation of the Mishnah to explain why the Mishnah is necessary, what the Mishnah teaches us that's different from before, it'll use the words lo nitzricha, it's not necessary, ella, only for the following. So what are the words that the Gemara uses to explain the Mishnah? It's one word that I'm looking for. It follows those words, lo nitzricha ella. That is the Gemara's second interpretation of the Mishnah.
No, lo nitzricha ella le'akdim.
Does everyone agree?
No, don't agree. Shoot me.
Right, Mr. Ben Chaviv is pointing to three lines from the Batim on Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. Three lines from the Batim. Lo nitzricha ella lekadim or lehakdim. Does everyone agree that that is the word that the Gemara uses to encapsulate its second interpretation of the Mishnah? Lekadim, Mr. Amster agrees. Everyone else? Let's have a vote here. Lekadim, is that the proper word to put numbers 3 and 4 in the second? Okay, so we're all on the same page. We had two interpretations. We had two interpretations of what Lekadim or Lehakdim means. There was the interpretation of Rashi, which is the interpretation that we worked with for most of the time. And that is, what does it mean to that if you didn't put the Techeles first, the Lavan still works? If you didn't put the Lavan first, then the Techeles still works. What does it mean putting the Techeles first or putting the Lavan first?
Which one you started putting into the Beged first? The question is,
I would really call on somebody new just to hear a fresh voice. But does anyone want to be called on?
No. Fresh here, but a different meaning.
Okay, so we will we'll let Mr. Ben Chaviv and Mr. Amster be the shluchim of everybody else. So.
No, but he's
Shluchei Tzibur.
He has seniority.
Shluchei Tzibur. So what do we have? Rashi says that lehakdim means that you're supposed to put into the hole first. What are you supposed to put into the hole first, the Gemara suggests? Whatever string is the same color as the garment. If you've got a white garment, you should be putting a white string in first, because that's hakanaf, min kanaf. The tzitzis is supposed to look like the remnants of the edges of the thread that the garment was woven from. That's what Rashi says. And if the garment is blue, then the Gemara thinks at this point that we should put a blue thread in. We'll analyze that in greater depth in a second shiur today. Yes?
You're saying that the four strings are put in separately, not all four at once.
That is what Rashi says. Now, do we paskin like Rashi? I don't know. I'm not sure. I have not yet gotten up to the part where the Shulchan Aruch would talk about it if he talks about it, and so I'm not sure what people actually do when they assemble the tzitzios. I'm not sure whether they put the white strings in first, followed. Well, nowadays we don't have a blue string anyhow. But those who make tzitzis with blue strings, so I don't know what they put in first.
Is it the same color then that they'd be put in, or at the same time, or they have to be put in separately?
Rashi thinks that they need to be put in separately. Right. So, what difficulty did the Gemara find with this explanation? This was Rava on Amud Beis. Rava said four words.
It takes too long.
You see, the Gemara is able to pack a tremendous amount of power into a couple of words. Rava said, Midi tziva kagarim. Does the color cause? He says that it makes no difference whether the talis is blue or whether the talis is white. When we talk about establishing an order for what to put in first and what to put in second, it depends on most talisos, or on most talisos, the way that they were worn or colored or manufactured in the time that the Torah was given. And therefore, Rava says, even a blue talis, the white string should have precedent, because most talis are not blue, most talisos are white. So that is Rava's interpretation. And do we pass in that way? I said, I don't know. The Shita Mikubetzes had a slightly different interpretation of Lekadim, of Lehakdim. Right? He said that it doesn't mean that we put the strings first into the hole. It means which chulya, which series of wrappings is closest to the baged, and which chulya is further away from the baged. The one that you're makdim, right, the one that's closer to the baged, is the one that you're going to wrap first. And the one that you wrap later is going to be further away from the baged. So that's the Shita Mikubetzes. He says that it's not in time that you give precedence to the min kanaf, but rather it's in space. But again, the Shita Mikubetzes is making the same assumption that in a blue garment, you're supposed to give spatial preference to the blue strings, not to the white strings. Again, Rava has the same objection. Midei tziva kagarim. Does the color of your individual talis cause or establish the order? It's not the color of your individual talis, it's the color of all of our talisos taken together. We've got to take a vote. We'll take a survey, what color are all the talisos, and then we'll establish the order of white and blue on the basis of everyone's talisos, not simply on the basis of each person's individual talis.
In the case when there is a blue string, that needs to be the longest one to tie around the other one, so it...
You probably are going to end up making a white string the same length as a blue string and alternating, but we'll discover that more a little bit later.
Okay.
So, and do we pass in that way? The answer is, as far as I'm aware, yes. We are supposed to be makdim, the white string, no matter, right? If you're having white and blue, so the white string is supposed to come first pretty much no matter what. And that's, as far as I'm aware, that is how we pass in. Then we have the final interpretation of the Gemara. Rava, after rejecting the previous 2/4 interpretations, Rava gives his own interpretation. And again, if I had to summarize in one word, Rava says, Lo nitzricha ela, for what? Right? We only need this Mishnah to tell us what circumstance, that the talis is kosher in what circumstance. What's the word that Rava uses?
Gardumin.
Gardumin, excellent. If the strings got chopped off, so gardumin. Right? So what are the cases? Rava says, right, what's the case? How did pretty much everyone explain Rava's case of gardumin? If you have a talis and both trela strings got cut off, but the lavan strings remain intact, then the Mishnah says it's kosher. And if both lavan strings got cut off, but the trela strings remain intact, then the Mishnah says it's kosher. That's what Rava says. The Gemara did not find any difficulty with this position. Seems to work out according to everybody. And do we paskin this way?
Yes,
we do pass in this way. Excellent. We may pass. We may. Yes. Very good. So.
You need a slip knot. It has to have a slip knot. Doesn't have to have a slip knot.
The 50/50. Take those odds anyway, right?
Gardumen has to have a slip.
The gardumen has to be long enough to make a slip knot out of it.
Right.
Yes.
It's
okay. Yeah.
If you render around, you said the kazima wrapping it around. The white and blue is wrapped together. So how could you possibly do one before the other?
I mean, I have to wrap one string first, and then I have to wrap, meaning it's the string that I'm wrapping around the other strings. If I have a white and a blue string, then I'm going to alternate. I'm going to either do three wraps with a white string and then three wraps with a blue string, or I'm going to do one circle with a white string and then two circles with a blue string. The Rishonim have different interpretations, but everyone agrees, this seems to be, the Shita Mikubetzes seems to gather a greater support from other Rishonim, that it's in space, that you need to make the white wrapping closest to the corner of the baged, and after you've made some white circles close to the corner of the baged, then you can start making blue circles. But it seems to be that we alternate between the white and the blue string, and exactly what we do in between is also a discussion. Is it white, and then all blue, and then white? Right? Or is it white, blue, white, blue, white, blue, white? That's also a discussion amongst the Rishonim. But definitely clear that there's alternation between the white and the blue, and hopefully we'll get there on Thursday or next Monday. So, in general, we paskin lemaskana, especially Ashkenazim, but the Shulchan Aruch advises Sfardin to try to do this also, that we need all four strings to be intact. We need all four strings to be intact, and therefore, If a person knows for certain that... Ooh, thank you so much. Thank you. If a person knows for certain that one of the four strings is broken on both sides, so then that would invalidate the tzitzis. One second. Next time I do this, I'll know to get the more expensive whiteboard and the more expensive easel. Let's see if we can do it like this.
See, you have some flexibility there.
Yeah.
How did you get yourself?
Okay, we'll do it without for today. Okay, once again. Yeah, but it was hard to.
It should be a base.
Also, the fault is not.
Thank you very much. Excellent. Okay, so we saw, just in terms of the psak on this Garduman issue, we saw that there was a dispute about when we talk about a string being intact, did we mean a quarter string, 25%, one of the four strings that comprise the raw materials of the tzitzis? Or do we mean a 1/8 string, one of the strings that comprise the final product of the tzitzis? That was a machlokes when it comes to techeles between the Rambam and the Ravid. The Rambam says that only 1 out of 8 is dyed blue, and the Ravid says that no, it's 1 out of 4 dyed blue because the Ravid follows the initial ones. There's a parallel machlokes we showed him by Garduman as well. When we talk about strings remaining intact, do we mean that the quarter string must remain intact, and so that means that if either end of the quarter string is intact, then you're good?
According to those that say 1/8, that means you only dye half of the string.
Yeah.
No, everybody says you put in 4. Mm-hmm. So you dye half.
You would dye half the string, exactly. That's what the Rambam says. So if you have the quarter string, then if you know, for instance, that 2 of these got chopped off, and you know that they're both from the same string, or even if there's a chance that they're both from the same string, so then it's going to be puzzle, right? But if you've got 2/8 from 2 different strings, then the talus will remain kosher because you have each of the quarter strings is still intact on one side. So if you say that you have to take the talus apart, unless when you initially assemble the talus, make sure that all the strings have one side on one side of the gnat and one side on the other side of the gnat. We've got 4 strings on one side of the gnat, 4 strings on the other side of the gnat. So if you make sure consistently to keep the strings, the 4 sides, 4 of one side on one side of the gnat, 4 of one side of the other side on the other side of the gnat, so then how will you be able to know that even if 4 edges are cut, that the talus remains kosher? Because if they're all on the same side, then you know, right, that it's only one side of each string that was cut off, but the other side of each string remains intact, and therefore the talus will remain kosher. So you could potentially have...
Four
times 1/8, chopped off, and it'll still be kosher, right, potentially, right, if it's all on one side. In contrast, the second position says that you need to have all of, one second, see, it's complicated enough that I need to refer to my notes as well. It doesn't help that I couldn't fall asleep 4 o'clock yesterday. Okay, the second position maintains, right, that the talis is kosher, but if you're missing one string, meaning 1/1/8 string from the techeles part, and 1/1/8 string from the lavan part, so that will invalidate the talis. If you're missing the techeles, the lavan can still fill in. If you're missing the lavan, then the techeles can still fill in. But if you're missing both, if both of them are missing, so then there's neither one can fill in for the other one. So they would say 1/8 plus 1/8 renders the talis possible.
One eighth white and one eighth blue.
Right. So if that's the case, then if you're missing 4 of the 1/8, it's possible, right? Meaning even if they're all on one side, because we're counting by the eighths, that means that you need to have either the 4 techeles eighths intact or the 4 lavan eighths intact. So if you're missing 4, it's going to be possible. In contrast, can you think of a case where according to the second position, it'll be kosher? Imagine a talis with techeles. You need to have either 4 lavan strings intact or 4 techeles strings intact. So what's the maximum that you could be missing? You can also have it kosher as being missing 4 1/8, right? But that would be 4 times 1/8, and where would that be? In order for it to be kosher, they would have to be like 2 per side, right? And it's got to be the right 2. It's got to be right either all of the treeless ones or right all of the loving ones. So then this one would say kosher, right? But the first opinion would say that it is possible. So those are the two interpretations of Gardumin that the Shulchan Aruch brings down halacha l'maisa. The Shulchan Aruch urges us to be machmir for both of them. For Sfardim, it is the first interpretation which is more authoritative. And so if you can't help it, you have a choice between either this talis or this talis. The Sfardim should choose this talis, the one which is missing 4 on one side, because that's the more authoritative interpretation for the Sfardim. In contrast, the Ramah urges us to follow this interpretation, that this one is more authoritative, and therefore if an Ashkenazi has to pick a talis that's going to be missing something, it's better that it should be missing either all of the treles or all of the lavan, even though that's on both sides, because in the end of the day, the opposite one, either the treles or the lavan, can compensate. I hope I got that right. Going to sleep 4 in the morning. We'll double check it tomorrow when I'm better rested, hopefully. But that's basically what we have with the Gardumin. Now, moving onwards. If a string from one talus was chopped off, this is number B on the chart, and not even a slipknot's length remains, one should ideally get new tzitzit strings. However, if he's unable to do so, his talus is still kosher. It's not clear that he could continue to make a bracha on it. I wrote that too hastily. It's not clear that one can continue to make a bracha on such talis, except according to the following authorities. So we have 4 different solutions to when a talis might be kosher. We don't paskin like any of them, right? But there are 4 rishonim, each one for a different reason, who maintains that this talis is going to be kosher. So we saw number 1, the Ravid's interpretation of Pesil Techeles. The Ravid was the one who said that a string means 1 out of 4 strings, a quarter string. And therefore, right, the Ravid would tell you, as would the other Rishonim who apply the Ravid's position to the case of Gardumin, that since you have one side still intact, then you're good. Right, you've got one side intact, you're only missing on the other side, so potentially you're still good. Tosfos' extrication of 4 white strings from the problem of Baal Tosif. Now we saw that there's a discussion about whether the 2 white strings that replace the Techeles are those replacements for Techeles, in which case we'll treat them with all of the halachos of Techeles. So therefore, if they're absent, then we'll say, oh no, the tzitzis is missing something. Or are they simply extra features which the Torah permits us to add to our talisos, but are not strictly necessary, and therefore, even if they are impaired, that's not going to disqualify the talis. Really, we should be putting on two strings. The Torah gives us permission to put on four. So we'll put on the extra two just in case something, but really all we need is two white strings. We're taking advantage of the Torah's permission to put on the other two, but if those extra two that we put on become invalid or chopped off, it's not going to disqualify anything, because we're yotzei ideally with only two white strings. That's a second possible way to say that you could have one string chopped and it'll still be kosher. The third way was, the Rambam's understanding of why Techeles and Lavan are one mitzvah, even though each one alone is kosher. Right? The Rambam says that because the Techeles and the Lavan share the same theme, it's Leman Tiz Keruvas Yisemes Kol Mitzvos Hashem, therefore they can fill in for one another. And so if something gets chopped off, maybe, potentially, right, the other one, if the Lavan gets chopped off, the Techeles can fill in, and if the Techeles gets chopped off, then maybe the Lavan can fill in. Again, all of these, you know, it's one reading of these Rishonim. There are other readings of these Rishonim as well, but there's at least a potential. And finally, this is the strongest. This is the strongest of the four, and this is what we left off with yesterday, and that is Tosfos' understanding of when chopped off tzitzis are still kosher. We noted yesterday that when we talk about chopping off the tzitzis, there's a machlokes between Rashi and Tosfos about how far down the tzitzis get chopped off. Rashi says, it'll be easier if I have a talis. Rashi says, that as long that you need both the braids, the wrapped parts, and a little bit of the individual strings in order for the talis to be kosher. So you need both of them. And therefore, when we talk about something being chopped, we don't mean chopped over here. That would certainly invalidate the talis. We mean chopped over here. You need to have a slip knot length after the final knot that's furthest away from the baged. That's what Rashi maintains. And according to that, if it gets chopped off all the way to the root over here, then it would potentially be possible. Tosfos, however, maintain that we don't need a slip knot's length after the furthest knot away from the baged. All that we need is a slip knot's length away from the closest knot. From the closest knot to the baged. And so if you still have some of the wrappings wrapped around, then you're fine, even though you don't have the loose strings hanging down. That's the position of Tosfos. And what I want to devote, we paskin like Tosfos b'di'eved. In other words, that's why I said that a person can still continue to wear their talis. Let's say they're far away, they don't know how to tie the strings themselves. They need to, you know, to wait until they have time to take off from their work and travel to a farm store to get the strings. So they're still allowed to keep on wearing the talis, even if there's nothing left all the way down to this knot over here, because the eved, we do rely on Tosfos. But as the Mishnah Berurah says, we shouldn't be making a bracha on such a talis. It's a safik bracha livatala. Safik brachos is always lahakel. And so Rashi would say that this is an invalid bracha, so we shouldn't make it. But in terms of wearing the talis, we are willing to rely on Tosfos. We consider Tosfos to be sufficiently authoritative. So that's what Tosfos says, that b'di'eved, the five knots alone.
You don't need strings at all. You don't need tail, you don't need anything.
Okay, so we'll have to see whether there's any source for that as we go through the Gemara. Right now, we seem to be assuming that if you've got gardumin, if you've got a slip knot's length, right, after at some point, so then you're fine. But if you have less than a slip knot's length, so then it's a problem. Now, the machlokes between Rashi and Tosfos hinges on what we read yesterday. We read an inference from the fact that gardumin, right, are kosher, Rava wanted to infer that you need to have more than one or more than two gnats in your talus. So let's just imagine for a second. When Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai, right, we're talking about the bare minimum talus. So how many gnats do you need to have? So it seems, and we'll get to this in a second, that everyone agrees that there's a minimum of a single double gnat. Because if you don't have a single double gnat, then the tzitzis will just unravel and fall out. It needs to be permanently attached to the baged, and therefore you need at least a single double gnat. However, there's a machlokes, if you're doing that single double gnat, where is the ideal place to make the double gnat? According to Rashi, what you should do if all you have is the ability to make one gnat, is to put the tzitzis into the hole, then immediately start wrapping without making a gnat. And then once you've wrapped around and finished wrapping, then make a double gnat at the top of all of the wraps. And that is the single gnat which the total... No, that would be the only gnat.
Right.
Meaning that you would not have a first gnat. You would start wrapping immediately,
right,
and then make a gnat far away from the baged at the conclusion of the wrapping. That's for Rashi. That is the main gnat in the tzitzis. It's the one that is far away from the baged. That's the gnat that Moshe Rabbeinu would have made in his tzitzis if he was doing it minimally.
Why do you have to wrap them around first before the gnat?
Because you may need to have both wrappings and separate strings. So if you wrapped around after that, then the wrapping would just unravel. There would be nothing to hold the wraps in place.
But if, I understand, but why do you need the wrappings?
You need the wrappings, that's what Rashi would say. It's a machlokes on lamites amud beis, on whether you need the wrappings or not, but Rashi is going to assume that you need both wrapped around parts and strings hanging down, and so you need to have the knot in between the two to preserve the wrappings in order to make the tzitzis kosher.
Is the wrapping the Torah Moshe Sinai or what?
That's what it would seem like.
So you do need it, there's no question with it.
It's not even Allah Moshe Sinai. We'll get to it more in depth on Daf Lamed Tesem of Beis, but the Gemara says it's sensitive to the different formulations in the two parshios of tzitzis. In one parsha, the tzitzis is called Gedilim Ta'aselach. What is a gedil? A gedil means a braid. So that parsha seems to indicate that the tzitzis must consist of braids. However, in the parsha of Kriyas Shema, we never refer to the tzitzis as braids. We call it tzitzit hakanaf, we call it a pesil techeles. A pesil means a single individual thread. So that seems to suggest that the tzitzis are supposed to be composed of individual threads. How do we resolve this potential contradiction between the parshios? So there's one opinion, which seems to be the one that Rashi's following, that tells us just put the two together. You need it to be a braid, and you also need there to be individual threads. That's why you need the braid, and then you need a little bit of thread afterwards in order for the talus to be kosher. That's what Rashi would seem to say. The second opinion in the Gemara, which seems to align more with Tosfos, is that it's telling you that you can either have a braid, or you could have loose strings, and that is what you need, either or. And therefore you'll be kosher with either the braid, even though there are no loose strings, or with loose strings, even if there is no braid. That would seem to be the second opinion. Now, take a look for a second at the last line of the Gemara. The Gemara says that if all you had was one gnat, right? According to Rashi, that's the gnat far from the baged. According to Tosfos, that's the gnat closer to the baged. If all you had was the one, so then I'm reading from the fourth line, Kavon de ishtari lei ilai. When the gnat, which is called the ilai, what's the shoresh of ilai? What's the root? Al, right? It's the one that's on top. The one that's on top. Right? The ilai, the top gnat. So then, ishtari lei kula. If you don't, if you allow for gardumin, right, you let it be chopped off, and there's only one knot, so then when that knot becomes unraveled, then everything else will unravel as well. So the question is, what is the top knot? What is the top knot? Now, what's that going to depend on? Which gnat is on tap? Which gnat is on tap? The one that's closest to the baguette or the one that's furthest from the baguette? The closest to the baguette. So when I'm just wearing the talus in a regular way, the gnat which is closest to the baguette is the tap gnat. So whose opinion does that reflect?
That's
Tosfos. That's Tosfos. The one closest to the baguette is on tap. That's if you are wearing the baguette normally. What if you're getting ready to kiss the tzitzis at Shema? Which gnat is a tap gnat?
The last one.
The furthest one. That's the opinion of Rashi. So the genesis of this machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos lies in how to interpret this word, Eloi, the tap gnat. What position is the talus in, right, when you're looking at it, when you're observing it, to determine the identity of the tap gnat? Is it in a position where the strings are hanging down just by gravity alone, right? Or is it in a position when the strings are, when the strings are upwards, when you're holding them, in which case the furthest gnat is the one that's going to be the tap gnat. So that's the genesis, right, of the machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos. But it's more complicated than that. It goes even further. Yes?
Should the tap knot, when you say a tap knot, it's the normal way that a person wears the tzitzit. So you say a tap knot, so it's the one that's closer to the kanat. That's the tap knot. Otherwise, it would be called the tachthon.
You think that Tosfos is more poshut than Rashi?
Absolutely.
Okay, maybe that's why the Shulchan Aruch says it, but the Avad, you can rely on him. You don't have to treat the talus as puzzle. Right, it's very passable. Again, when it comes to tzitzis, we have this principle in Psak Halacha that because it's so easy to get a new pair of strings, a new set of strings, that we're going to be machmir even for positions that carry less than 50% of the vote. Right, and so therefore it may be, right, that Tosfos' position is more harmonious with the pshat of the sugya. We'll see in a second whether that's the case when it comes to all the other proofs that Rashi and Tosfos each bring for their position, right? But you could argue that Tosfos' position is more harmonious. Tosfos got the majority, right, of the vote, but nonetheless, because it's so easy to be Yotzei Rashi as well, so then, right, so we'll also do whatever we can to be Yotzei Rashi. That seems to be what the poskim say, that tzitzit is so easy to acquire. But again, if it's not easy to acquire for whatever reason, so then we're not going to rely on Tosfos, but we'll try to satisfy Rashi as well. This is all b'di'evad so far, right? We'll get to the lechatchilas in a couple of lines. So,
but the fact nowadays is that it makes sense to invest in a containing a talus that was sold than peristysis, because peristysis, they just cost like $11, and that costs more than that to get one of the fringes in place.
If you get the right type of strings, it can cost you $10-$11 just for a set of strings, and then factor in the amount of time it takes to, to tie it.
Right.
But so again, it depends on a person's. Should I say it depends on a person's finances? It depends on the availability and the pricing.
Right.
That's really what it depends on. So let's take a look. There's a second issue that also informs the debate between Rashi and Tosfos, and that is, it depends on the same line. So let's read that last line again. Right, the Gemara says, Kivan de ishtiri lei ilai, because the tap naft, whatever that is, gets untied. So then, ishtir yilei kula, the entire tzitzis becomes untied. Now, let me ask you a question. Perform a thought experiment. Imagine that the tzitzis get chopped off, and that's all that's left over here is a slip knot length. Do you think that this knot is going to get untied? Or do you think that the slip knot length of string that sticks out after the knot is going to anchor the knot in place?
I could anchor it. What's the difference if it's a slip knot?
Okay, so we need it to be fixed. The reason that you need a knot to begin with is to affix it permanently to the baguette. And so if the tzitzis is going to become undone fairly soon, so then it's going to invalidate the tzitzis.
I would assume that it would not remain permanent.
That it would not remain permanent. So we can, even if there's a slipknot length.
Every time you have to tighten your own tzitzis, you know, because the last one unraveled, so there's nothing there.
Well, how long is a snot length? I guess that's another question. Right, let's just let me imagine for a second. We can probably do a measurement here, right? But I need to make a slip knot. I think that I was having difficulty with this last week also. But I need to make a slip knot. Let's say that I'm going to make a slip knot of one around three others. So I'm going around like this. And then I'm going to put this through to see how long it is. This is not so pashut. I have to do the experiment myself, or maybe one of you can do the experiment afterwards. So Rashi says, or Rashi, Tosfos seems to say at least, that a slipknot's length over here is sufficient to anchor all of the loops in place. Now, Tosfos at the same time make the assertion that a slipknot length over here is insufficient to anchor the loops in place. Scientifically, I don't know how that works. The only thing I can imagine is one of two things. Either Tosfos is saying that when the slipknot has the loops before it, so then it's more firm than a snot that all it has before it is, sorry, when a regular knot has loops in front of it, it's going to be more firm than when all it has in front of it is loose strings. So that may be why Rashi assumes, why Tosfos assumes, that a slipknot here will be more secure than a slipknot over here. Right? Or it might be that Tosfos feels that a slipknot over here, if it becomes unraveled, so then you'll be left without any, right, without any of the loops. Because if you're talking about just one knot, then when this knot becomes unraveled, then the whole tzitzis will become undone. In contrast, now that's not even going to work, so let's even forget about that for a second. So Tosfos is making this assumption. If you've got the loops followed by a knot, followed by a slipknot's length, so then your tzitzis are not going to unravel. But if all you have is loose strings, followed by a knot, followed by a slipknot's length of loose strings, so then your tzitzis are going to unravel. Based on that, Tosfos level a challenge at Rashi. Rashi says that if you've got a slipknot's length left over here, the tzitzis are pasul, because the Gemara says, kivan de ishtere le'ilai, that once this knot goes, and this knot is sure to go, then you won't be left with anything. But Tosfos will say that if you've got the slipknot's length left after the knot, so then it's not going to go. The knot remains a permanent knot. So Tosfos claimed that Rashi's response was that this Gemara is arguing on the previous Gemara. The previous Gemara says that the talis is only kosher if you have a slipknot's length left. However, Tosfos claim in the name of Rashi, this Gemara maintains that even absent the slipknot's length remaining, the talus will be kosher. In other words, that my friend doesn't have a problem. You don't need a slipknot's length. Where does Rashi get this from, that there may be a machlokes? He says, look at the language of the Gemara. The Gemara says, just going up to the second to last line, Hada Amri b'nei Rabbi Chia, that which Rabbi Chia's sons say, Gardume techeles k'sherin, that if the techeles get chopped off, the talus remains kosher. Gardume ezov k'sherin, that if the ezov gets chopped off, the talus remains kosher. They don't specify how much is left. There is a different Amora who specifies how much is left, but Rabbi Chia's children don't specify that. So perhaps they left it vague deliberately because they maintain that you don't need anything to remain.
Is this on a corner by corner basis, or is this on the whole existence? For example, if you just have one half of one of the cystids, it's and the rest of the garment is still good, so that invalidates the other rules or because
If only one braid is not kosher, then the whole tzitzis is not kosher. Because right, that in that sense, they're all one mitzvah. Rabbi Shmuel says that there are four mitzvos, and so the absence of one means you've gotten three out of four.
Right.
But the Chachamim say, no, they're all one mitzvah, and so you need to have all four components, just like a lulav and esrog, if you're missing the esrog, so you might take it just to remember the mitzvah, but you're not actually fulfilling the mitzvah. So that seems to be another score in favor of Tosfos, right? Tosfos are arguing that at the top, right? You don't you would have to maintain that you could basically that there's a machlokas in the Gemara. We never like that. We always like all the opinions in the Gemara to be as harmonious as possible. So if there are two options available to us to either interpret, right, two statements in the Gemara as arguing with one another, or to interpret two statements in the Gemara as agreeing with one another, there's always going to be greater weight assigned to the interpretation that allows the two statements to agree with one another. Right? Because the Amoraim were very smart. Right? And how can we say that one of them was wrong when we could potentially say that both of them were right? So that's why Tosfos feel that they have a little bit of an edge over Rashi here. Shulchan Aruch, you know, says that as well. Right? They have an edge over Rashi, not only because of the Kesher Elyo and the top knot being more likely to be the one that is closest to the Beged we're talking about when the tzitzis are hanging down, but also because according to Tosfos, all of the Amoraim in the Gemara can agree that the talis needs to have a slip knot's length left afterwards, as opposed to for Rashi, right, in order to say that it's going to untie, that he needs to interpret one of the Amoraim as maintaining that even less than a slip knot's length is still kosher. Everyone with me on that?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's, you know, basically we're 2-0 in favor of Tosfos. What is Rashi's Raya? So Rashi appeals to the Gemara that I mentioned earlier, that's going to come up on Daf Lamed Tes Amud Beis. Rashi maintains, right, to that it says in one parasha gedilim, which means that the tzitzis must be braided, and in the other parasha it says pasil, that the tzitzis must contain strings. And there's an Amora in the Gemara who says that it needs to be braided and have strings, according to Tosfos. Right, if you're going to tell me that it's kosher when all that's left is a slip knot's length of braid, where are the strings? Where are the strings? Now Tosfos bring this Gemara up, and Tosfos say, don't bother me with that. I can explain this Gemara even according to the Man D'Amar who says that you need both the braid and the string. Tosfos don't tell us how they do that. And I don't know how they do that. That's what Tosfos say. I could explain you that Gemara. It for sure is good if you say that you don't need the strings and that all you need is the braid, or either the braid or the strings. But Tosfos say, I could explain you the Gemara even if you need both the braid and the strings. I'm not sure how Tosfos do that. So we'll have to keep that in our minds for when we get to Lamed Tes Amud Beis, and perhaps we'll see over there, maybe as we learn the sugya a little bit more, we'll get it a little bit deeper how Tosfos get that. I suspect that what Tosfos is going to do is he's going to reinterpret what either or means. Sorry, he's going to reinterpret what and means. This and that. This and that. And is a very critical word whenever it appears in Chumash, whenever it appears in the Gemara. Does this and that mean that the two things are equal? Or does this and that mean that one of them has priority? And that's a good Sheva Brachos Torah. And one of the Brachos of Sheva Brachos, we say, Misameach Chasan Im Hakala. And in the other Bracha, we see Misameach Chasan Vichala. What's the difference between them? Right. So one of them is with, the other one is and. Right? Does one indicate two equals and the other indicate one being more important than the other? And if it does, then which one is more important? Yafet Talmud Torah im derech eretz. So which one is more important? Right? You think it's a no-brainer. It's machlokas vishonim. It's also machlokas vishonim what derech eretz is. But, you know, it could be that that's... Anyhow, so that's what we have. We have, it says, there is an Amora who says you need a braid and strings, right? Pashtos, that means that you literally need both of them equally. If you're missing the strings, the braid can't do what it needs to do for you. If you're missing the braid, the strings can't do what they need to do for you. My feeling is that this is going to reinterpret the word and. And he'll tell you that maybe one of them is more critical than the other, but we'll have to wait for Lama test for that. So that brings us basically to where we left off yesterday, and now we have another 5 minutes left, so let's cover a little bit new ground. So first we just need to tie up, if you'll pardon the pun, the question that Rava raised yesterday, and that is that if you say that gardumin are kosher, if you say that gardumin are kosher, so then don't you have to worry that the knot will get untied and that the tzitzis is not permanently affixed anymore? Once the strings got chopped off, the tzitzis are no longer permanently affixed to the baguette, and that would render them puzzled. So the first suggestion that the Gemara offered, right, this is on the third to last line, just take a look for a second at the third to last line, third word on the third to last line of Lamed Ches Amud Beis. Rava's first suggestion was, Amar Rava, Shma Mina, we can hear from the fact that Gardumin are kosher, that Tzarich Likshor, you need to tie a double knot, Al Kol Cholya V'Cholya, after every series of loops. And that's basically what we do. We've got four Cholyas. Right, if we had Tchelas, we would tie somewhere between 7 and 13 Cholyas. And Tosfos would say, it's not enough to just have one knot, right? It seems from this sugya that you need more than one knot. So to that, the Gemara responds at the top of Lamed Tes Amud Beis, and I'm just going to skip around because we read Lamed Ches Amud Beis already, Lamed Tes Amud Aleph, right, the next Amud, all the way at the top, the Gemara says, Dilma, maybe the Iktar, what does the word Iktar mean? I'll give you a quick hint. There are certain letters that change between Hebrew and Aramaic. And one of them is a shin sound changes into a tes or a tuf sound in Aramaic. Right? So in Hebrew, the word is isha, and in Aramaic, it is itisa. The shin changes to a tuf. In Hebrew, it's a shor, and in Aramaic, it is a tor. So iktar, right, if you just translate it back from Aramaic into Hebrew, becomes nikshar, like a kesher, a knot. So maybe we're talking about a case when we say that the gardumin are kosher is when he happened to have tied it. Doesn't mean that you must tie it. It means that if you want this fail-safe, right, if you want to make sure that your talus will remain kosher in spite of being chapped, then you must tie extra knots. But if you're going to guard your strings and keep them long, so then perhaps you can suffice with a single knot, because the talus remains permanently affixed. The basic principle is it needs to be permanently affixed, and therefore, whether it is permanently affixed because you've got long strings and one knot, or it's permanently affixed because you've got short strings and two knots, either way you'll be fine, but you don't need to have the fail-safe. Just telling you that if you happen to manufacture, to assemble your talus with the fail-safe in place, Dilma, Diikshar, Dinikshar, Shinikshar was already tied. That's when Gardumin are kosher. But if it wasn't tied, then Gardumin would be pasul. But if there's no Gardumin, then even without being tied, it's going to be kosher. Omar, Ve'omar Rava. Rava also said another thing. Shmamina, we can infer from the following, that Kesher Elyon Deoraisa, that at least one knot is a necessity in the tzitzis midioraisa. You can't get away with having tzitzis that are not permanently affixed to the baged. Now, the previous Shma Mina, when Rava said Shma Mina, we hear from this, he was referring to a statement that the Gemara had made already in the past. This Shma Mina over here is referring to a statement that the Gemara is going to make in the future. Shma Mina doesn't always mean from something that went before. It can sometimes mean we hear from the following this halacha. So we heard the halacha, kesher elyon deoraisa, the top knot. Again, you have that enigmatic top. Is it the top knot that's closest to the beged, which is the top when the bed, where the tzitzis are hanging downwards, or is it the top knot which is furthest from the beged, which is the top when you're holding the tzitzis in your hands? But whatever it is, one of those two knots is deoraisa. The isaka daitach derabanan, because if it were to cross your mind that it's only midrabanan, my itzrich lemishri sadin betzitzis. Why is it itzrich? Tzarich. Why is it necessary, right, to be matier, right? Again, that shin changes with a tough, right? Lemishri is like lematiri, matir, lemishri. Right, so in Aramaic, the tough in Hebrew now changed into a shin in Aramaic. It goes both ways. So amai itzrich lemishri, why do you need to permit sadin bitzitzis? To tell me that I can have a sadin, which we said was, we had a sadin on lamed ches amud beis,
linen,
a white linen baged, white linen baged. Does anyone remember what context we had that sadin on lamed ches amud beis? We contrasted it, right, the two lishonos of the Gemara. We had two different interpretations of the Mishnah. What does it mean? Lavan is not ma'akev the tcheles. Right? One interpretation said that if you've got a sadin betzitzis, then you for sure need to put in, if you have a sadin, then you for sure need to put in the white strings first. And the other interpretation said even if you have a wool baguette with tzitzis, you need to put in the white strings first. I'll remind you more about that in a few minutes. So sadin means a white linen garment. Sadin with tzitzis. Tzitzis is comprised of what do you manufacture the tzitzis strings out of?
Wool.
Right? And even though you could theoretically make the white strings out of linen, but tcheles must always be made out of wool. That's the definition of tcheles, is blue dyed wool. So usually if you put blue dyed wool and you tie it with a knot to a linen garment, what do you end up with?
Shatnez.
So how can the Torah tell us?
That's the one case where it's okay, though.
It's the one case that it's okay, exactly. And how do we know it's okay? It's a pasuk, right? Not explicit of a pasuk. We'll get more to what the exact dynamics are, but there is a pasuk that tells us, extra word, a juxtaposition, choice of an odd synonym, that it's a juxtaposition. I'll give it away. It's a juxtaposition, right, that tells us that you're allowed to tie wool tzitzis to a linen garment, and there's no prohibition of shanes. We don't paskin that way nowadays because we don't have tcheles, but back when we had tcheles, we did. And let me ask you a question. Let's say that you don't need to permanently affix the tzitzis to the baged. If you don't need to permanently affix it, is there a shanes problem?
No.
No shatnez problem. Theoretically, this is an interesting question. Let's say you've got linen Velcro, right, and you want to put it onto a wool baguette. Is that a shatnez problem?
No.
Probably not. It's not a permanent fixing.
Permanent.
It needs to be literally
permanent.
So let me, if, so.
Yeah.
Shua tavo even knows, right? There's a lot of, you know, shatnez is its own complicated. So Rava says, if you didn't need to permanently affix a tzitzis to the baguette, you didn't need some sort of a kesher elyon, then you would not need a pasuk to permit wool tzitzis on a linen baguette. We would just say, do both. Put it in. Don't fix it permanently. You'd have to check it very often to make sure that it didn't fall out, but it would still be kosher. The fact that you need a special pasuk, a special juxtaposition, to teach me that you don't have to worry about shatnez when it comes to tzitzis, my itzrich lemishri sadin betzitzis. Why is it? Why do you need a pasuk, a juxtaposition, to teach me that a linen garment can still have wool tzitzis? Pshita, it's simple. It goes without saying. Hatochiv techifa achas. A person who just puts one string through a hole, just one time through a hole, ain't no chibur. It's not a connection. They're not both in the same garment. Ella, therefore, Rava says, rather, Shmami, no, we hear from the statement that we just made that it's Trich Lemishri Tzadim Etzitzis, that it is the Oraisa.